Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're going to try and cut through one of the UK's most complicated legal thickets right now.
It is a thicket, isn't it?
It really is. We're talking about the collision between the Equality Act 2010 and the Gender Recognition Act 2004, especially after that big Supreme Court ruling. Our mission today is just to give you a quick, practical primer so you can actually understand the rules of the road.
Exactly. And to do that, we probably need two foundational definitions just to get us started.
Okay, let's have them.
So, the Equality Act, the EA 2010, that's the UK's main anti-discrimination law. It protects you based on 9 characteristics. For this deep dive, the two to really focus on are sex and gender reassignment.
Right. And the second one.
The second is the Gender Recognition Act, or GRA 2004. That's a law that allows a trans person to get a gender recognition certificate, a GRC, which historically changed their legal sex for all purposes.
For all purposes. Yeah. Okay. That phrase feels important.
Yeah.
So let's unpack this recent legal shift, because for years there was just a lot of confusion about what sex actually meant in the Equality Act.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Massive confusion. But the recent 2025 Supreme Court ruling, the FWS case, it finally clarified that specific term. The court basically held that sex within the EA 2010 refers to biological sex. And what's so fascinating here is the crucial legal paradox this created. If you hold a GRC, that certificate still absolutely changes your legal sex for things like marriage or pensions.
I see.
However, and this is the key thing, that acquired legal sex does not automatically count as sex for the Equality Act's provisions. That is the single most important divergence for you to grasp.
Wait, hold on. So how can both of those things be true? It sounds like the court just sort of canceled out the GRC for non-discrimination law.
It feels like that. But no, the law didn't remove protections. It just narrowed one specific definition. And here is the legal safety net.
Which is?
Trans people remain fully protected under that separate characteristic we mentioned, gender reassignment. So discrimination or harassment targeting someone because they are transitioning is still 100% unlawful.
Okay, that makes sense. So the overall protection is there. It's just structured differently. Mm. Let's get into the main area of friction then. Single-sex spaces. That's covered under Schedule 3 of the Act, right?
That's right. And this is vital. The ruling does not mandate exclusion of trans people. It doesn't say you have to exclude anyone.
So what does it say?
It clarifies the legal basis for making a decision if you choose to. So any restriction of access to, say, a changing room or a women's support group, it has to be lawful, proportionate, and you've got to document it thoroughly.
Let's make that real. Imagine a local swimming pool. If they want to restrict access based on biological sex, they have to pass what's called a proportionality test.
Exactly. Exclusion is only allowed if it is a proportionate means of achieving a legitimate aim.
A legitimate aim being something like safety or privacy or dignity.
Yes. And if they try to restrict access without solid evidence, the sources we've seen are clear. They risk major legal claims for indirect discrimination or harassment. And this is why it's all become so complex for organizations. They now need to document their reasoning, usually through something called an Equality Impact Assessment, or an EQIA.
So the key takeaway is that inclusion is still perfectly legal.
Perfectly legal, provided the organization grounds its policy in defensible, evidence-based reasoning. The focus has to be on that documentation to ensure dignity and safety are maintained for all users.
So what this all means for you is that the debate has completely shifted. It's not about whether trans inclusion is legal. It is, under gender reassignment. It's now about how organizations must justify their policies for single-sex spaces based on this new, narrow definition of sex.
Precisely. This whole landscape now requires really careful policy work. Inclusion lives in the day-to-day practice, you know, not just in the statute book.
And that leaves us with a final, I think, provocative thought. If policies about who can access a space become based purely on someone's perceived biological sex, what are the risks, which the sources note, say gender nonconform cisgender people like butch women, also get caught in that net of harassment and mistaken identity? Something to think about.